Dr. Green, I'm going to ask you a few questions to follow up what you just testified to. You're married, correct?
Yes, sir.
And your husband's name again is?
James P. Green.
And I think it was established how many children you have, perhaps, or at least stated in opening. How many children do you have? And I'll ask you to break that down between the, whether they're biological, foster, or adopted.
My husband and I gave birth to 2 children. We've adopted 11 children, and we are planning on adopting other children.
And before I forget, did any of your blood relatives, your blood children, did any of your biological children, I guess is the best way to put it, did either of your biological children work in this program?
No, sir.
So it was only your adopted or foster children?
That's correct.
Speaking of foster children, how did you go about getting into the adoption of foster children or caring for foster children?
Well, about 28 years ago, when I was in my senior year of dental school, it was always on my mind to adopt because it's a ministry for me to try to help children, to help children that are in need of help. And I was watching the Wednesday's Child program, and 3 children appeared on the screen, and it just touched my heart that those would be our 3 children. So that year, in 1987, we adopted our first set of 3, and we saw the change that had happened in those children. So 2 years later, we became foster parents. And after 6 months, we adopted those 3. Then 2 years later, we took in 3 more and adopted those 3. And then we waited a while and ended up adopting 3 little boys. One was 18 months, one was 3, and the baby boy was born in the hospital addicted to crack cocaine. So we took that group.
When you say Wednesday's Child, what is Wednesday's Child? You said that was a program you saw on television.
It's a local program on Channel 32 where I think it's weekly. They air children that are in need of homes, children that need to be adopted. And these are special needs children, which mean they're either in a sibling group of 2 or more, or they are 5 years old and older. Or in the case of African-American children, even if the child is a baby that was born with crack addiction or drug addiction, they will label that child special needs.
And you didn't exclude children with any special needs or that may have had more difficulty or complexity in their foster care?
Every one of my adopted children are special needs.
Have any of your children followed suit in providing care of foster children or adopted children?
Yes, my oldest daughter, birth daughter, is a foster parent, and on November the 4th, National Adoption Day, 2010, she adopted 3 children. She's a single mom. Another daughter that we adopted has become a foster parent. She lives in Charlotte, North Carolina. She's a school teacher.
When you say it's a ministry, what do you mean? Would you expound on that just a bit? You said this is a ministry to you.
Well, it's a ministry. I feel like God has put it on my heart to help youth and children and troubled youth. It's something that I've always done. I've always had an affinity to try to help youth become better than their circumstances. And it's just something that God has put in my heart to do.
Let's talk briefly about City Council. You at some point ran for elective office.
That's correct.
And you ran for what position first?
Metro Councilwoman, District 1.
And who was your opponent? Did you face opposition?
Yes, I did.
And who was your opponent in that first election?
Mr. Leonard Watkins was the sitting council person, and Mr. Ray Barker was an opponent.
The same Ray Barker that's opposed to the complainant in this hearing?
That's correct.
The same Ray Barker that's sitting to your left at the table?
That's correct.
How did you fare in your election?
Out of the total. I had more votes than the two men put together.
So you won your election?
Yes, I did.
Did there come a point where you ran for re-election?
Yes, I did.
And when was that?
That was 2010.
And did you have opposition in your second election?
Yes.
And who was your opposition in your second election?
Mr. Ray Barker.
Is that, again, the same Ray Barker that's sitting at the finance table?
Yes, it is.
So he tried to defeat you twice then?
Yes.
Now, Metro Council, are you divided into districts?
Yes.
What is your district?
District 1.
Tell me a little about District 1, where it's located, and sort of the makeup of District 1 in your eyes.
District 1, the boundaries start from 22nd and Broadway over to Main, going north, on down to the Parkway, Northwestern Parkway, and I pick up Park Nouveau going south. And then District 1 even includes Southwest Louisville, Cane Run Road area, all the way down to Lower Hunter's Trace. So it's a very diverse district. It's almost like two districts in one, and I love it.
What can you tell us about the industry and the poverty and job opportunities in District 1?
Well, District 1, part of it lies in Portland, part in West Louisville. And it's a very impoverished area. Everyone knows that it's wrought with high unemployment among not only adults but youth. A lot of gang activities right around the area that I live at 43rd and Broadway. A lot of children that you see that drop out of high school. Just a lot of degradation. And the district is very dirty.
What about your experience or certainly your perception with gang activity in District 1?
Very aware of gang activity in District 1. There are several groups that live right around where I live, groups called 4100 and groups called C&G. And a personal involvement is two of my boys, adopted boys, were on their way walking to their school bus stop to go to high school and got jumped by a gang.
And do you remember approximately when that was, at least what year?
That, I think, was 2008. I think that was around October 2008.
When you say jumped by gangs, were they just accosted and yelled at, or did it go further than that?
They were beaten up. One boy spent some time in the hospital with a concussion. They took my son's tennis shoes off their feet. They took their backpacks. They threw their books down. They took their watches, jewelry, cell phones. It was a brutal beating.
And one of them spent time in the hospital?
One spent time in the hospital.
And what did you do? What effect did that have on you as it pertained to gang and gang abatement?
Well, it hurt me deeply. But it showed me that the complaints that I was getting from other people in District 1 about gangs, now it had come home, close to home. I saw it up close and personal. You know, a lot of these boys that are in the gangs, they know me. Some have played basketball in my backyard. But I don't know their involvement in gangs. I've since learned that they are in gangs. But it was devastating, but I did not want these boys prosecuted because we did find out who some of the boys were. What I wanted to do is to try to create a program that someone could talk with these boys about proper etiquette in their community, about getting along with each other. So I also asked Dr. Woods, would he accept a grant to help with gang abatement, and he did so.
You mentioned prosecution. Did you not refer them or try to have them prosecuted?
I did not want them prosecuted. I did not want those boys prosecuted. I understand that hurt people hurt people. I understand that.
But Let's talk about your duties for a second as a council person, as an elected official. In your capacity, you represent constituents.
Yes.
What is your duty? What are your duties as far as helping the people you serve?
Some include folks calling up saying there's a crack in the sidewalk. Could we fix it, pay to have it fixed? Some include our organization is having a reunion or a block watch. Can you pay for the food out of your budget? Some things include, there's many things. Road, maybe a road is in need of repair in front of, on their street. Maybe there needs to be street lights and various other things. There's all kind of programs also that people asked us to fund.
How much involvement do you have with your constituents, and does that involvement give you more insight to be a better council person?
I take this job as a council person very seriously. So I'm involved in almost everything that I lend my name to. Southwick Community Center, Mr. Sammy Moore. I'm there probably once a week watching the children do karate, watching them play basketball, Easter egg hunts, Christmas programs, Parkland Boys and Girls Club. I just funded a new basketball scoreboard. I'm there watching and meeting these kids. I want to see what good the work that we try to do as Metro Council members are causing. I want to see that.
When you visit Southwick or Parkland and those community centers and kids are there, do you merely observe from a distance, or do you interact, talk with them? I'm not asking if you play ball with them, but do you talk with them and do you engage them?
I love kids. So, yes, I talk, play with them, and Steve, I do play ball with them. Dance with them, yes. Yes, I do.
And do you feel that gives you insight to help you be a better council person?
It does give me better insight, but I also want these children, these youth, and even some of the parents to see a role model and to see. I tell them my story often of where I came from, the town of Henderson County, Corydon, Kentucky, 900 people. My father left my mother with 9 children. But my mother always says it doesn't matter where you start, it matters where you finish. And all 9 of us have college degrees.
Let's talk about, it may be an appropriate time in light of the weather outside. Let's talk about an experience you had in your district with a flood in the West End and your involvement. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, yes.
Would you discuss that real briefly, please?
Yes, that was a couple of years ago. I'm not sure the exact year, but we all remember the flooding, I think of 2007, 2008. And my district got hit very, very hard. So I, along with several other council members, for that matter, took money out of our budget that we had not budgeted for to do massive cleanup. People's basements and houses were flooded. They lost everything. Folks were calling me. FEMA had to be called in. FEMA came in. I facilitated people in my district to how to apply for FEMA funds. We commissioned a truck, I think it was Ecotech Environmental Services, to go out and clean up District 1. We did that for 3 weeks straight to clean up people's homes, to clean up the mess they thrown in, that was thrown out in the backyard. I delivered, and I was on the truck with the people. We got Dismas House. The guys there helped out, and I fed those guys. We delivered dinners to some of the elderly. And as a result of my work, FEMA went back and nominated me for a national award called the Phoenix Award. And I was in the running with national figures all over the United States. I did not win the top award, but FEMA in Atlanta, Georgia, went back and nominated me as an outstanding participant on behalf of my constituents during a natural disaster. And I have a beautiful booklet and a beautiful plaque for being nominated from this district.
So you didn't just appropriate a cause to be appropriated grant money, you actually got involved.
I get involved.
Let's talk about, move over to the Metro grants and the grant process, if you will. You mentioned earlier that you get requests for help. Would you walk us through, the commission members, through how the grant process works, particularly the grant that led up to the $35,000?
Well, usually an organization will call our office and ask, can we get help for this program? And they have to submit an application. And with submitting that, then I look at it and I decide, is this something that we can fund at this time or is it not? And if we decide that I want to fund that program, it is submitted then to the Appropriations Committee, which is a group of about seven council people that sit on that committee. It's vetted through that committee, and then from there it goes to the full council where it's voted on by the full council.
And talk briefly about the money that each council member receives to distribute.
Each council person receives $100,000 for capital projects and $75,000 for neighborhood development grants called NDFs.
And the grant that you obtained here on behalf of, that went for the clean team, did it go through the city budget?
That grant went through the city budget. Every year, the mayor proposes a budget, and he leaves a little bit of money there for each council person to determine what might be needed in their district. And that's usually about $60,000 per council person. Every year, I've asked that my money be placed on a cleanup program, that $60,000. So that is through the mayor's budget.
And there, I assume there's paperwork. We've heard a lot about paperwork. I assume there's paperwork that's required to be completed to obtain these monies?
Yes. The agency has to fill out paperwork with whichever department that the Office of Budget and Finance places it in.
Agency being the recipient?
The recipient.
Then this budget goes to the Budget Committee or does it not?
It goes back to the Budget Committee, and the Budget Committee votes on the entire mayor's budget ordinance, and from there, the entire council votes on this budget.
And did that happen in this instance with the money that you provided to Life Institute?
Yes, sir.
Let's talk briefly about this ethics ordinance. You were asked some questions about that. Do you recall any discussions with fellow council members about this ethics ordinance or the revised ethics ordinance?
Yes, I do.
And do you recall any discussions with them about this ordinance as it pertained to perhaps the grants and work that you wanted to have done in your district?
Yes.
Would you relay that for us, please?
There was a lot of talk when we were trying to revise and amend the old ethics ordinance. And during our Democratic caucus session, you know, I always brought up the fact that we have the Green Clean Team. Other council people brought up their issues of their children working for them. And I can remember when I brought it up, I said, now I want to make sure you all are saying in this revised ordinance, before I can vote on it, want to make sure what I'm hearing is correct, that as long as I'm not directly supervising my children, the adopted and foster children can work with the Green Clean Team. I remember vividly one of my colleagues looking at me kind of funny because a reporter was in the room. And a lot of times you just don't want to say things. But I wanted to say it in front of the reporter, in front of my colleagues, and ask the question. And the answer from probably six council people sitting around that room was, as long as you're not directly supervising them.
Um, Operation Hope Clean Team. Briefly, the purpose of that was to clean up the community and help people with skills, life skills, or what was the purpose of that?
Well, twofold. It was to help those kids with life skills, help them to learn how to be on a job, come on time to a job, how to interview in a job, look people in the eye, give a firm handshake, and also to help, clean up the district. There's trash everywhere in District 1.
You mentioned look people in the eye. Why is that a concern of yours? Why do you care whether a teenager in District 1 looks someone in the eye, an adult, when they're talking with them?
Because I believe, as I've taught my own children, my adopted children and my birth children, that you can get much farther ahead if you look at people squarely in the eye, shake their hand, let people get a sense that you're an honest person by looking them in the eye, not looking away. And I want the children that I interact with to understand that.
So you're in the clean up the community part. What's the value? Why do you care about whether the community is clean or not?
I always believe that if our environment is clean, people will respond better, they'll respect it more, they'll be proud. People will be proud to ride down West Broadway and not see piles of trash on the sidewalks and on the side of the street. It was a small thing to try to get the district cleaned up. There were other things that I wanted to do. I've been in contact with businesses that have said that they will do their part to keep their area cleaned up in front of their store. One in particular, Mr. Frank Ward, McDonald's Corporations. I met with him and his corporate person about 2 weeks ago at the grand reopening of the 28th and Broadway store. He has vowed that he will keep the area cleaned up, and he also asked would I be involved with a back-to-school event with him. Mr. Ward happens to be Mr. Barker's boss.
There was some mention about speakers. Were there speakers involved in the operation of this program, and if so, what was the purpose of having speakers?
The purpose of the speakers were so the children could learn and see positive role models. There were probation officers, there were police officers, and I particularly thought it was important to have a police officer come because I wanted to demystify the role of the police and let these children know our police are not out to get you. They're not out to shoot you. And if you're doing wrong, stop and talk to the police. And if you have to go into custody, do so with respect. I've gained a great deal of respect for the Metro Police since Chief White has been the chief. So I've gained much respect for the police officers. My daughter, who is a prosecuting attorney, agreed to speak. Mr. Michael Shoulders was a speaker, and there were others.
When you say agreed to speak, they agreed to speak to the participants in this program?
Yes.
Did you make sure that your daughter was paid for her time speaking?
No one got paid.
So they volunteered that?
Yes.
I want to follow something. You touched upon Youth Alive earlier, and you mentioned that Youth Alive was the first agency that operated your program before Life Institute.
Yes.
And you mentioned that you went the next year, you didn't return to Youth Alive to operate your program again, but you went to Life Institute, and you said something about a tragedy. Would you just briefly tell us why you did not return to Youth Alive in year two?
Unfortunately, there was a great tragedy one Christmas season. The Youth Alive participants went to a party at Presbyterian Community Center. Four of the participants got off the Youth Alive van and got into the car with a juvenile. That juvenile ended up in a high-speed chase, and those four boys, who I knew very well, died that day. And the driver, who I knew very well, went to jail.
So the next year you went to Life Institute?
Yes.
To run the program. You mentioned that you had obtained a grant for Life Institute, I think you said previously, so that when you go to Life Institute now, after Youth Alive, this is not your first experience for the Life Institute.
Right.
You were already familiar with Life Institute.
Yes.
And what did you know about Life Institute?
I knew that Dr. Woods worked with gangs and trying to help young men to stay out of gangs, be positive, try to help them to see a better way and to just get along with each other in the community.
Do you recall whether you had ever asked or sought other council members to make donations or of their funds to Mr. Woods or Dr. Woods?
Yes, I did.
Because you believed in him?
I believed in him. I believed in what he was doing in his program. And I lobbied and raised, for lack of a better word, $27,000 for the Operation Hope program with Life Institute, which is their gang abatement program. Other council people added on. Some added on $5,000, some added on $2,500, some added on $1,000. And my colleagues were happy to add on. They know my enthusiasm about youth and my concern about youth and our youth in this community. So they were happy to add on.
And what kind of assurances did you receive, or did you receive any, that Dr. Woods was able to operate that program and that grant properly?
Now, are you speaking of the Green Clean Team grant?
No, not first.
The first grant.
The first grant.
Once we appropriate that money, the Metro Council is no longer involved in monitoring or follow-up with the program, with how they report the paperwork to the program, and we're just out of the loop. Now, because his program was in my building, the building that I practiced dentistry out of, I did go upstairs sometimes to talk with him. I did meet some of the guys that had been incarcerated and were coming out. I did develop some relationship with Dr. Woods.
So you interacted to some extent with the kids in this program as well?
Yes, I did.
And let's talk about the grant for Operation Green Clean Team. You went back to Dr. Woods.
Yes.
And you asked him to operate this program?
Yes. We all were concerned about Youth Alive. We knew they couldn't do it. Other folks had offered. St. Stephen Family Life Center had offered to operate the program. But I thought because of Dr. Woods' expertise with handling tough kids, it would be a no-brainer that he would do it. And he agreed and told me he had the capacity to do it.
You were asked about, I think you testified earlier, how you got the word out and of this program to encourage kids to apply. I think you said you went on, did you say Metro TV?
I mentioned it on Metro Louisville TV. When we do announcements at the end of our council meeting, my assistants took out flyers to the various businesses and to the churches. I also was on a program with WLOU, a local radio station, and I mentioned it then.
Why did you get the word out through so many different avenues?
I wanted these children to be able to do something for the summer rather than being out on the streets wreaking havoc and getting in trouble.
But did you want a large number of people to apply, or did you want a small number?
I wanted as many as wanted to work. And The first appropriation was $35,000. I told Dr. Woods, if we run out, if there's not enough, I would appropriate more from my neighborhood development fund. I wanted every child that wanted to work, I wanted them to work rather than hanging out on the streets.
You were asked, you talked a lot about and was asked a lot about interviews and the fact that you got involved in the interview of these applicants. So did you get involved in the interviews?
Yes, sir, I did.
And quickly, why did you just, and this has been touched a bit, but just why did you get involved quickly in the interviews?
I wanted these children to know how to conduct an interview. I wanted them to know how to dress appropriately for an interview. I wanted to give immediate feedback on the things that they did positive and good and the things that they needed to work on. One young man came to the interview in a pair of pajamas. Sometimes, I don't know if you all know, nowadays these children will wear a T-shirt and pajama pants with SpongeBob on them. We asked that young man to go home, get dressed, and come back the next day in at least khaki pants, and he did so.
So he did return?
He did return.
In regular clothes instead of pajamas?
He came back in a pair of khaki pants and still had on his tennis shoes, but that was okay.
I understand that you're a dentist. Have you ever had occasion to do any dental work for any of the kids in the program?
Yes, I did.
And would you explain that, please?
One day I observed a kid that had a swollen jaw, and I saw him and I said, honey, what's going on? And he said, my tooth hurts. And I said, well, where's your mom? He said, well, I don't know. I live with my auntie. My mom is a drug addict. I live with my aunt. He said, well, let's call your aunt over the phone and see if I can work on your tooth to get you out of pain. We got in touch with his auntie, and she gave the permission over the phone, and then she came in later and signed papers, and I did a root canal on this young man at no charge, and I put a crown on his tooth. Now, there was another occasion of a young man with a chipped tooth in the front that I did the same thing.
What about... I'm not going to go through each of these applicants or each of these participants, but you did mention maybe one or two more. You mentioned, I'm not going to go through each of these participants in the program, but I do want to mention a couple of others. I have you to mention and discuss a couple of others. Did you ever interview someone that showed you a shooting scar?
Yes, I did.
And I want to make sure, just to remind you, you know, I don't want any names of children, but just if could you just describe that, please?
One young man.
Yeah, I've been patient, but I'm going to object. I'm not sure what relevance this has to the distribution of grant proceeds. But, I mean, I appreciate it, and I've tried to be patient, but I'm going to object at this point forward.
Your Honor, I only have one more. This is the last one, and it will tie into her involvement. She's been...
Give you a little latitude.
Okay. Would you briefly describe, you said that you did interview someone that showed you a shooting scar.
I did interview a young man that had been shot 2 years prior in the stomach. He showed me a colostrum bag, I think that's how you pronounce it, that he was wearing. He had been in a gang. He had gotten shot. And he said, Councilwoman Green, I can't do much work, but I can stand for a couple of hours, and I can bend over and pick up trash. I just want to work. I want to get myself out of these gangs. I want to stop selling drugs. I want to work, and I want to work and know I don't have to look over my shoulders thinking a police officer is coming or thinking somebody is going to rob me or take money off of me.
Did you turn him away?
No, sir, we did not.
So all who interviewed with you were brought into the program?
Everyone that interviewed came, was in the program to work.
So the fact that you had some of your own adopted or foster children in the program did not cause you to exclude anyone else?
No, sir, I did not exclude anyone.
You were asked several questions about pay, so let's talk about pay. That's a central issue in the case, so we'll discuss that. How did you determine what the kids would be paid?
I had talked with the manager of Project One and other youth programs, and it seemed to be that the going rate for summer employment for youth was about $60 a week.
And is that was the amount that was determined as appropriate for this case?
Yes, $15 a day.
There was a discussion of sign-in logs, or I think you said that supervisors kept signing logs, and I want to touch about how the pay was determined for each worker. Would you discuss how pay was decided for an individual worker?
Well, if they didn't show up that day, they did get docked. But the supervisors were supposed to do that. There was a lot of issue with those supervisors not showing up. There was a lot of issues with the supervisors having, you know, been incarcerated and not showing up, or they were coming late.
When you say supervisors doing that, what do you mean doing that?
Not taking the roles correctly.
So I want to talk about how, let's give me an example of how someone got paid and how it was decided how much someone got paid. Was that your discretion, or was it based more on a formula? And if so, what was the formula?
Well, the supervisors were supposed to take the role, and based on the sign-in sheets, or really they X'd out, they X'd the child's name for that day, put an X in a box. Based on that, we looked at those sheets, and the kids were paid based on that.
So the kids were based on the sign-in sheets prepared by the supervisors?
Yes.
And they were paid by whom?
Dr. Eddie Woods.
Did you supervise any of your relatives in the program?
No, sir.
Did you ever provide any type of preference to any of your relatives in the program?
No, I did not.
Let's talk about, and we're wrapping this up, just so you know, ladies and gentlemen, but let's talk about James Green for a second.
James P.
Yes, your husband, I'm sorry. You asked him to volunteer because of your concern for safety?
Yes.
And?
Well, he volunteered. I came home distraught a couple of nights after seeing kids languish in the parking lot and run in and out of the building. My boss, Dr. Susie Riley, was upset. She was putting pressure on me to do something about it. I would talk to Dr. Woods and the supervisors about the situation of the supervisors not showing up and the kids hanging around in the parking lot and in and out of our building. And my husband volunteered.
And what did he do as a volunteer?
He came down every day. He would get the supervisors together and have a meeting with them, trying to teach these young men who were only about 21, 22 years old. There was one young lady. He would try to talk to them and teach them about role modeling to these younger kids and how they needed to be on time. And if they weren't going to be there, to call him, because he wanted to make sure the other kids were properly supervised.
Did he have any role that you know of regarding transporting kids anywhere?
Every now and then he would transport some of those younger kids after maybe the supervisor would call and say, well, this child is tired. Or he would pick up the young boy that had gotten shot because he couldn't stay out very long. He also would take water to every site. As well, he prepared a list, a route list, based on the logic map that my district consists of. And he would break that map of my district down, and each group had a particular area of my district to go to for that particular day.
Dr. Green, two or three final questions. You did not obtain an ethics opinion for the operation of the Green Clean Team, did you?
No, sir.
In hindsight, do you wish you had obtained one?
I do wish I had obtained one if I knew that this it would have come to this, yes.
Did you ever intend to do anything, Dr. Green, to help your foster or adopted children at the expense of other kids in this community?
No.
Did you ever intend at anything during the operation of this program for these kids to do anything unethical?
No, I did not.